Welcome back. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money here with Dave and Faisal. And we're talking today, Faisal, about a topic that I think is going to be of real interest in this particular environment, you know, during the pandemic and post-pandemic. Now, it's something that we have talked about in the past. It's called behavioral finance, and it has an influence. We often talk to people about the fact that investing is part math and science, and it's part art and emotion.
Yeah, and let's change the words today from behavioral finance only to emotional investing.
Emotional investing.
I think that's where the focus is going to be. We've seen that throughout our career in this business, but I think it's going to be a little bit different this time around because of the pandemic. Very rare times do we have in history where we've been seeing such opportunities in different types of asset classes while going through a recession, while being isolated in your own dwelling, and a whole bunch of things that are going on. And now emotional investing will come out, I think, at a higher level. But let's talk to the experts who've been doing a lot more research on this.
Well, and I think why people need to pay particular attention to this conversation is because this can actually do real damage to your portfolio, the flow of capital, your ability to fund your lifestyle in retirement. This can do real damage if you get it wrong. Anyways, we've got a terrific guest to help us understand this. Dr. Greg Davies, PhD, Head of Behavioral Finance, Oxford Risk. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, gents.
Okay, so you have said that this could be a perfect storm for emotional investing. I think we're going to start with that statement right there and maybe walk us why you think that's the case and what do you mean?
Well, we've had financial crises before, 2008, 2009. You know, markets got incredibly disrupted. Everyone got stressed. But there was a very big difference between that and the situation we're at now, because that was a financial crisis, almost exclusively. Whereas now we have potentially, for many people, simultaneously a financial crisis. Their livelihoods are at risk. Many people are not getting the income. They don't have the certainty of income they used to. It is also a health crisis, and it is a social crisis, because we've all been shut away from each other. These stresses all compound on each other. And one of the things that we know that happens when people are stressed, when people are anxious, is that the emotional component of our decision starts to loom larger and larger and larger. And in an investing context, you could think what happens is people's emotional time horizons get shorter. And if you want to be a good investor, you need to be focused on the horizon. You need to be focused on the long term. And the more our decisions are made around what makes me feel emotionally comfortable today, the more I'm going to be deviating from what is actually good investment decision making and good practice for my long term financial needs. So all of these stresses crowd in. Add to that, people are stuck at home. They've got time on their hands. There's boredom. All of these things compound into this perfect storm.
Greg, I've always heard from many of the experts in the market saying there's two things that push the market up or down, fear and greed. And I want to challenge that with many of them. I think it's fear and fear of missing out. So I think those are the two that actually drive markets more. I don't think it's greed. Mm-hmm. I think people are afraid of missing out. And so we know, and your research has shown, that the average investor loses 3% average rate of return per year over the long term because of emotional investing. And now you're feeling it's going to be even more given this this pandemic. Give us a bit more insight of why you think, first of all, where did we get the 3% from, and why you think it's going to be more this time around?
Yeah, so the 3% comes from looking at reams and reams of academic studies and academic literature over the last decades about how our emotionally led decision-making costs us money in various ways. But we can roughly think of this as coming in two big chunks. One chunk is the fear, very much closely related to the fear aspect, is probably the biggest behavioral cost for most people is not what you do when you're invested. It's the fact that many people are too reluctant to invest in the first place. They leave money that they don't need for expenditure in the next couple of years. They leave it sitting in cash year after year after year after year. And the foregone returns from failing to invest for emotional reasons can for many people actually be the biggest behavioral cost when it comes to doing the right thing with your money. The other component is when we are invested, we do what feels comfortable in the moment. That frequently means we overtrade. It means we tend to take on more risk when times are good and less risk when times are bad. And you really don't need me to sit here and tell you that you should be buying low and selling high, not the reverse. But our psychology leads us to do exactly the opposite. And that those actions that we take along the investment journey cost us money in the long term, because what we're doing is we're acting in a way that buys me the emotional comfort I need to get through today. But in doing so, I'm taking actions that are costing me money in terms of long-term returns. And that is often thought of as what's called the behavior gap. It's the gap between the investment returns if I just invested my money in a diversified portfolio and sat tight. Doesn't take a great deal of skill to do that, but the average investor probably underperforms that simple buy and hold strategy by around 1.5 to 2% per year for the money they put into the markets.
Greg, let me just, maybe you can expand on this, about market timing. So I get exactly what you're saying, and part of this sitting on cash often for people is this notion is I'm going to wait for a pullback or I'm going to time the market. But that market timing decision also happens all the time with investors when they see volatility, say, in the stock market, they get scared, they sell out, and they're going to wait to get back in lower. And we know that they almost never do that, right? Because it's terrifying when it's low. They would rather buy high. And there's your scenario about buying high, selling low. So what can you tell us about that market timing decision that people try to make as well?
Well, for most people, and here I'm not talking about professional investors who are forced to be in the market and are forced to time. The thing that a retail or a household investor has that the professionals do not have, and it is a huge advantage, is they have the value of time. They can just afford to put money in and wait. They can sit out the ups and downs. Now, they can do that financially, but very often they cannot do it emotionally. And so for a retail investor, a non-professional investor, honestly, the best thing to do with regard to market timing is not to try to do it. Because, when do I put my money in the market? There is not a single day in the whole of recorded human history where it would not have been really easy to find an excuse why today I should not invest. Because there's always something going on in the newspapers. There's always some bad news. And what we find is that when people are sitting on cash, uninvested, they lurch from one excuse to another of why today I should not get it in. And often those excuses are, I'm waiting for the right time. But how do you know when the right time is there? You simply don't, right? So it is much better to go, I don't have a crystal ball. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to put my money in. And for investors of this sort, frankly, an optimal strategy is one of benign neglect. Put your money to work and then just leave it alone. Now, that is not emotionally easy to do, because as humans, we have this action bias. We think that if I'm invested, if all my money's in that market, I better be doing something with it all the time. Whereas in reality, frankly, the best thing to be doing is nothing for quite a lot of that time.
Greg, we've seen a big rush of other types of investments that have been very popular during this pandemic, and maybe even just before the pandemic, one being Bitcoin or cryptocurrency, other ones being these meme stocks, maybe even a gold rush, if you want to call that to some degree. How did those types of investments get so popular from an emotional perspective? And I can go back to even cannabis stocks when it first came out here in Canada, where people were going saying, just we have to be part of that. And that's where I get my FOMO idea, the fear of missing out. Tell me more about how it gets to this kind of level where people are just going, I get a lot more phone calls about cryptocurrency now than I ever have in history. And so why are people doing that now? So maybe you can give me some insight on where does that mindset or behavioral viewpoint come from?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I might challenge there is the characterization of those things as investments, because a lot of the time the behavior we're seeing is not investing behavior, it's gambling behavior. But, the two things that we've already drawn attention to, the fact that people have time on their hands and they're bored, and the fact that people are stressed and they have a shorter emotional time horizon, those are still playing out. But when we start to look at the sorts of investments that you're talking about, you're absolutely right on the FOMO, because particularly in times of stress, the appeal of the get-rich-quick scheme looms emotionally larger. It becomes more and more appealing. And when I see other people around me, as humans, we are incredibly relative people. The fact that my investments may have gone up by 10% is not enough to make me happy if I see that my neighbor's investments have gone up by 20%. And so absolutely you're right, that FOMO is there. The other thing that I think plays on this is there is a very strong social element in this. The effect of social media, the effect of information sharing in groups, in tribes, in like-minded people, a lot of this behavior is people gain a lot of emotional comfort from belonging to a group and from following a herd. And so in a way, sitting outside can start to be the stressful thing. And so we pile into these meme stocks, into into these investments that are whims of the moment.
Greg, we're going to have to pause there for a moment, but I want you to stick around and thank you for joining us just after the break. I'll get back to that moment. But Faisal, we've got an upcoming seminar that we've got to try to make some sense of this stuff, right? So the emotional investing, taking advantage of opportunities, not falling victim, to the short-term FOMO effects that you talk about, all an important element of making sure that you get long-term success in retirement.
It's about structure and discipline, Dave, and that's what we're going to talk about with our five-pillar investment strategy at our seminar on Tuesday, March 23rd, 7 p.m., live online. Now, you need to register for this, so give us a call. How about you give us a registration on our email by going to morethanmoneyradio.com. That's morethanmoneyradio.com.
Vaccines are rolling out. People are getting more optimistic. Okay, that's an emotional investing trigger. What problems can you experience coming up? Stick around after the break to make sure that you don't fall victim to one of those. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.